Good morning.
Good morning, Robert. How are you?
Doing good.
Well, great. Thanks for joining us on this Twitter space. And let's get started with some introductions, shall we?
Sure.
Can you tell us a bit about yourself? What do you do, and what industry would you say you represent?
I was moved to Cupertino, California in 1971 by my dad, and a little company started in our backyard called Apple Computer. I've written four books on technology since then. I've interviewed thousands of entrepreneurs. I used to have a famous blog and a famous video channel that I did on mobile phones, interviewing entrepreneurs. I was the first one to see Siri. I was the first one to see Tesla. I was the first one to see Instagram, and on and on. I've launched many, many companies over the years and worked as a strategist at Microsoft and then Fast Company. And today I help startups get to market, right? Whatever that means. Find funding,
Wow.
fix their slide deck, figure out how to find a customer, that kind of thing.
I mean, yeah, that's just great. Like helping the startups and coming from such a diverse background, that's really impressive, I'd say.
Yeah.
Okay,
It's been
so.
a fun career that I've had. And I have a front row seat on technology. And today I'm re following 35,000 people in the AI space and retweeting everything important there.
That sounds great. So, talking about AI, what are your initial thoughts on AI? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Will it have a positive or negative impact in the future? What do you have to say about this?
Well, when I get up in the morning and I put toast in my June oven, AI sees the toast and goes, "Oh, that's toast. I'll cook it for 2 minutes." If I put a piece of salmon in there, it says, "Oh, that's salmon." Right? So even my oven is AI and makes my life better. My car drives me around town. That's AI. My music is picked by AI. My bank is run partially by AI. So you just keep going, through life and society. You're seeing AI changing literally every day what we do and how we do it and the products we have and stuff like that. So, yeah.
I mean, that's great. AI is just doing its work and we are just, following. We are not doing anything at all. We're just letting AI do all the work.
Well, you still have to do a little work. You have to put the toast in the oven. Although someday soon we might have a robot that puts the toast in the oven before you even get up, right? And has it all ready for you. Those days are a little bit out in front of us, but
Yeah, I wonder what will happen to us humans when these robots will start popping up.
humans will find something else to do that's more interesting to humans than putting toast in an oven or running a factory floor or something like that.
That's fine. So let's dig a little bit deeper into this. Let's talk about machine learning. Can you give us a layman explanation of machine learning? What do you think about it?
Well, most of the technology I just described is actually machine learning. It's a subset of, I mean, it's a subset of AI. It's a form of AI that is really good at seeing patterns. So when I went to Israel and hung out with the guy who built Waze, he said human beings are patterns, or just a series of patterns. That a computer can watch and figure out pretty easily. We go to the same grocery store. We go to the same gas station if you have a gas car. You go to the same church if you go to church on Sunday. You go to the same school if you go to school, right? You go to the same office if you have to go to an office. You go to the same 13 restaurants most of the time. Yeah, once in a while you get outside of the pattern, and that's interesting too for the computer to watch. Machine learning it's hard for me to explain because I really don't understand the way the engine works underneath. All right. My friend Adrian Kahler, who built the first computer vision system for the Stanford autonomous car, which became the Waymo company. He ran the Google autonomous car team and then built core pieces of Magic Leap. So built core pieces of augmented reality glasses company, and then built a humanoid r robot company lately. He tried to explain it to me, but he started writing math equations on the whiteboard and trying to explain it from a math perspective, which is really how this works. And that's way over my pay grade. So if you want me to explain how it works from a math perspective, you should have Adrian on because he can explain it much better than I can. If you watch Andrej, who used to run an autopilot team at Tesla, he tried to explain it as a box that has a lot of knobs. And the box can watch patterns going through it and gives you out a different result at the end. And we're seeing that, well, even my June oven, right? My June oven is machine learning. When you put a piece of toast in there and the camera sees it and goes to the NVIDIA card, it's comparing that toast to pictures of toast that it was trained on over years, right? And it's really good at seeing things like that, right? And I'm not doing a good job of explaining it because I'm not a really good person explaining how this technology works. I can tell you what it does, which is you put a piece of toast in there and it says, oh, that's toast. I don't know.
Hi, Robert. It's me,
Hi there.
Mansoor.
Yeah.
I'm also from Social Champ, and I also have a few questions about this. But I was going through your profile. You do retweet quite a bit about, things to do with machine learning, augmented reality, AI, virtual
Yeah.
reality even. So I understand that machine learning is sort of an underlying thing in all of these things, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, again, if you have an understanding of this, could you tell us how machine learning co contributes towards things like AI, augmented reality, VR even?
Well, machine learning is AI. It's just a subset of it. We're starting to talk about generalized AI, where you could talk to the AI and it really understands the world and you and can give you very weird, deep answers. Machine learning is used for specific tasks right now, like seeing the toast in my June oven. Right? That's a very specific task. You can't talk to the June oven and ask it about how machine learning works. It won't answer you. But you put a piece of toast in there and it tells you, oh, that's toast, and it cooks at the right time. I mean, I just asked ChatGPT how machine learning it worked, and it gives a pretty good technical answer. So if you want a technical answer of how machine learning works, we can ask the AI itself. And you're starting to see that this is a new kind of AI compared to like Siri, which was the first consumer AI, or compared to the AI that's in my June oven. This is now starting to talk to us with these large language models and starting to give us a more generalized answer than just, oh, you put toast in an oven, right?
I understand it is very mathematical, and machine learning sort of
Well, underneath
is,
it is. I mean, what ChatGPT is trying to do is predict what is the next word, right? And it's very good at doing that, right? And that's why it makes mistakes too. It's mathematically trying to figure out what is the next word to go in the sentence. Sometimes that leads it down a bad path, right?
So I understand that again, all of these technologies at the moment are very reliant on syntax instead of semantics. So when do you think we'll actually see, computers understanding emotions and stuff like that behind words instead of just reading the syntax and the characters? Or do you think it's already sort of in play?
Well, the AI doesn't understand emotions. It's just it has ingested so much data from humans that it's figured out what the next likely word is. That's not emotions. My Apple phone is looking at my face 10 times a second right now with a 3D sensor. And has it yet figured out my emotions? Like, am I yelling at the phone? Am I happy? Am I right? It can, it's starting to collect that kind of data. And certainly the bleeding edge AI researchers who are working in the labs are working on things like emotion systems, you know, and data systems. But we don't yet have that in a consumer product that we can point to real what that it understands your emotions real well. I think I see this as building an onion layer by layer, and we're about, you know, halfway through building this onion. The next layer is augmented reality glasses that have eye sensors and a camera that's looking at your face, right? Or a 3D sensor that's looking at your face. The phone already starting that. The glasses are going to take that way, way further. Plus, the glasses will know what you're holding, what you're touching, what you're looking at, what you're eating, right? What you're gesturing towards. So all of a sudden, it has a lot more data to study when it comes to emotion. After that, then you'll start seeing the emotion engines really start getting interesting, because they'll have the data to study.
Yeah, that makes sense. But also, going back to, everything being sort of mathematical, some would even argue that, humans only understand emotion because we are conditioned and trained to do so, which is sort of what machine learning does for AI, right? By studying and going through all of this historical data that's available to it. It,
Yeah,
just
each
draws
human being
connections.
is a neural network. It's just you're a very unusual neural network. You're a biological neural network. You're a little different than I am, right? You're the way your brain was built, the experiences that informed your neural network are different, and the architecture of a human being is different than a computer architecture. They both have advantages. You know, I think we're going to both be needed, right? The guy who ran IBM Watson told me what they showed you on TV is IBM Watson beats the human at the game of Jeopardy. But what he said what they didn't show you on TV is IBM Watson with a human being will beat IBM Watson alone.
That makes a lot of
Yeah.
So you mentioned a bit about augmented reality. Could you sort of, again, sort of give us a brief explanation for someone who may not have never heard of augmented reality, what
Yeah.
it sort of does?
Oh man, that's an interesting question. augmented reality is, you know, let me see if I can set this up better.
Yeah,
I look
go
at it
for it.
as genres of computing, right? If you look back at Apple II, the way you talk to the computer was with a command line and typing commands to the computer. Right? You wanted to copy a file from one folder to another, you needed to learn the command to do that. Then the Macintosh came along years later, and it let you drag things around from folder to folder. And that was easier for human beings to do. Then later, the devices started shrinking. And so we end up with a phone in our hands, right? iPhone was like the third paradigm of computing. That personalized computing, because it's always with you, and it now has sensor arrays so that it can do new kinds of computing because it's in your hand instead of on a desk where you're typing to it, right? And the next rage is going to be glasses that you wear. Why do you need glasses? Well, if you can put a visual layer between you and the real world, you can change the real world, right? You can. Well, for instance, let's take the most crazy example, right? I tell people you're going to put the glasses on when you go to Yosemite National Park, which is one of the most beautiful places in the world, right? And you're standing up on Glacier Point looking down at Half Dome, you know, looking across at Half Dome. Why would you put on augmented reality glasses? Well, you put on the glasses and it can tell you the names of all the mountain ranges around you. You can look up at the stars and see far more stars because we have databases of all the stars, right? You can't see all the stars even in a dark place at 2 in the morning. I've been out there. You can change the way the world looks and works and all that. And we haven't even started talking about some of the use cases there, but you start thinking, oh, how do you make computing ubiquitous, always around you, always there? You have to start wearing a pair of glasses, and that leads us into a magical new world.
True, that I do agree with that, but looking at some of the technology that has sort of been released around this concept, for example, the first thing I remember was Google Glass. And I mean, it seemed very interesting at the launch, but when it started getting into people's hands, it sort of just flopped,
Well, it didn't
instantly.
just flop. I mean, I wore it for a year before it really did flop every day, right? It was launched badly. It was an early technology. It wasn't true augmented reality, right? It was a little tiny screen at the top right of your
It was like
eye
a little heads-up
that really
display.
didn't overlay the world, right? The Microsoft HoloLens is more the device I think is foundational in this world, but
I agree that the HoloLens concepts and everything Microsoft's been doing with this is, a much more sort of fruitful proof of concept. But again, the hardware is just so bulky and heavy right now that, again, it's
that's
sort of
about to change because
like an anti-dust thing.
I've seen prototypes from Israel that are a lightweight pair of glasses with a really beautiful screen in front of you, right? And very small batteries, very small processor, very small. Everything has started shrinking to the place where it's getting feasible, right? You start looking at Snapchat's glasses. They have a full-on augmented reality computer on their glasses, and they're lightweight. The problem is the optics just weren't there, and the whole system just isn't quite there. We're close, but we still need Moore's Law to flip one or two more times, right? Even Loomis, who showed me the glasses, they say it's 2 years away from consumers, and which really means it's 4 years to 6 years before most people start really getting into this because the products are starting to get good enough, right? Bigger devices, though, absolutely. I mean, I have a HoloLens here. It's a real interesting device. It's big and heavy, and the optics aren't very good, and it's very expensive, for a consumer, for what it does. Yeah.
Let's see what happens in 4 to 6 years.
Well, you're going to see a lot of change over soon. Apple's coming with a device in June. And Apple's first device will be a heavier device. All right, so the AirPods Max is what, 350 grams? I hear their first product is about 280 grams. So it's lighter than the over-ear headphone that Apple sells, but it's not a pair of glasses. It's not something you're going to wear outside. You're not going to wear it while driving or r running or mountain biking or stuff like that. It's going to be for use inside in your home, or in your office, right, kind of thing. And it'll be pretty spectacular at that, because the two screens that you're looking at are two Sony 4K chips, which, when virtualized, can make a 12K screen.
Damn,
Very few
that's
people, even in rich Silicon Valley, have a 12K screen. I only know one billionaire that does, right? Most of us have 1K screens. Or if you're really nice, up to date, you have a 4K screen, right? Or maybe an 8K screen if you just bought one. So this Christmas is going to be a lot of fun because it's going to wake up everybody and show them what augmented reality is for and how to do it. And those glasses are hooked into a new kind of mesh network that is in 15 devices in my house, but isn't yet turned on. And it's also hooked into the M1 processor, M2 processor. 21% of those processors are AI inferencing, built for the autonomous car, for the computer vision systems in the autonomous car. And that also is not really turned on yet.
That's very exciting too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have two of these engines in my, I have one staring at me right now, and it's not being used. What kind of company spends $3 billion in semiconductor and doesn't turn it on?
Probably setting it up for something big.
Bingo. Coming in June. Yep. And by the way, this mesh is called ultra wideband, the technology.
Yeah.
This ultra wideband mesh is in all their products. So your headphones are going to get better this year. Your phone is going to get better. Your iPad, your computer, and of course the headset that comes this Christmas. That's what I watch. I don't really understand how it all works. I can't build. I mean, at
Yeah.
Microsoft, I talked with the team that built the core of the operating system. Those people are really, really brilliant. I can't do that. I can't even
Yeah.
explain. I mean, I could be literally looking at their screen and not understanding what their code is doing, right?
Yeah,
But I
me
talk to people like
neither.
that to understand what they're doing will have an impact on product.
Yep, I'm the same way.
That's why I retweet everybody. I can't actually do like I tried doing AI art. My AI art sucks because I don't have a vocabulary about art. I'm not an artist, right?
Yeah.
You give the same tool to an artist, all of a sudden they're doing stuff with it that's just magical.
Truly.
Because they have a better vocabulary to talk to these things with, right?
Yeah,
They
that's
know
true.
they went to art school. They studied all the masters. They know their names. They know the styles. They know the technology, how technology of art has changed over the years. They have a much better vocabulary to talk to the AI than I do.
Yeah, I
And so they
think
get better
every,
stuff out of it.
yeah, every industry is making the most out of
Robert, you
technology at the
mentioned
moment.
that you have around 15 devices at your home. So can we talk a little more about that? Like, what are the
Yeah.
practical uses of them? How it's helping you in your day-to-day life? And I think you mentioned
Well,
that you have AI control, so it's happening in automotive industry as well. So let's talk about a bit about that.
The ultra wideband. All right. So the guy who ran the team that made the AirTags or was one of the engineers on the AirTags team asked me, why do you think Apple built AirTags? And I said, oh, to find keys under your couch or stuff like that, tag your luggage as it goes through, an airport or something so you can watch and make sure it actually gets to where it's supposed to be going. And he says, no, that's not why we built AirTags. That's why we told you we built AirTags, but that's not why Apple built AirTags. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, we built them to make the augmented reality devices, the glasses, better. I'm like, okay, explain how that works. He goes, well, this radio network that's inside these devices is very unusual. It's spitting into the air the 3D location of the antenna, right? And it can be used as a tracking system around your house. So those 15 devices, think of a little piece of string in my house to each one of those devices. And there's a little counter on each piece of those strings that is very, very exact at knowing how far it is to each one of those devices. So the glasses are going to be able to know where they are in 3D space very, very precisely, and which direction they're aiming at very, very precisely because of this radio network. And that's just one of the things the radio network does. The other thing it does is it is 12 times faster than Bluetooth at sending data from device to device. So now think about having two people in a house with augmented reality glasses on, maybe playing a game against each other. They can talk to each other. They can send a whole bunch of visuality back and forth in a far better way than Bluetooth lets you do. Bluetooth is too slow for this. And it's also very, very low latency and very low at power. It can do all of these radio things without using much battery life. And so it's far better at building an ecosystem around augmented reality than Bluetooth is. Right.
But yeah,
we're not even talking about AI. We're just talking about the radio. By the way, so what does this mean when Apple announces this product in June? The augmented reality that's on the table in front of you, if you're wearing a HoloLens or a Magic Leap and you're dancing or moving your head left and right, it floats. It moves around a little bit. I just got the demo of Magic Leap recently again, and I have a HoloLens, and things float. Things are not really, really good, well locked to the real world. That's one of the things that breaks the augmented reality. And the reason for that is on the front of your HoloLens, there's four cameras. Same thing with a Quest 2 from Meta Corporation, or a Magic Leap has four cameras on it too. And it's using computer vision to build a 3D representation of the house around you or the office around you or whatever. And that has some errors in it. First of all, I can't see in the dark, right? It's using cameras. Now, Apple has a 3D sensor that can see in the dark, but it still has some latency. It still floats. The new headset that's coming, the virtuality that's on a table or on the floor, won't be floating. It'll stick to it in a way that nobody else can because of the radio network. It also means that if you try to turn on this device in the middle of the night, it knows where it is because of the radios. It doesn't even need to turn on a camera or turn on the 3D sensor. It's going to be able to figure out where it is exactly. And so it'll see in the dark, right? It'll put on the glasses and you can walk around your house in the dark.
Yeah, just like sonar.
Yeah, only it's not using sonar at all. It's using these radios, right? And computer vision. And it's called multimodal sensing. AI people talk about modes.
Okay.
When you, an Israeli walked me through a shopping mall and explained this to me. He said, okay, you start at the front door of the shopping mall. Your goal is to get to the Apple store, right? But there's no GPS inside the mall. The mall blocks GPS. So how are you going to get to the Apple store? He asked me. And I go, well, can we count steps? Yeah, there's an IMU inside the iPhone, right? And it can count how many steps you're taking. Can it know the direction that I'm taking? Yeah. There's a sensor in the phone that knows which direction you're in, but it has a lot of errors. So maybe you don't end up at the Apple store inside the mall. You start turning on the camera and turning on a different mode, you reduce errors. Therefore, you get to the Apple store in the mall. And same thing here. Apple has built a multimodal sensor array that will have less errors than anybody else, and therefore AR won't move around on you when you're dancing, right?
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about like lifestyle improvements that AR and AI are going to collectively bring, and it seems like this technology is just going to become commonplace at this point. But
yeah,
what do you think in terms of industry and like, you know, practical applications outside of our daily lives?
Well, they're already using VR at like Volkswagen. Irina, who's listening, and I have interviewed a lot of businesses about how they're using technology. They've turned their factory floor into a digital twin. So they've made a digital twin of their factory floor. And they use that digital twin in VR to do training, right? So if I need to get hired at Volkswagen to put air conditioners in a vehicle every 45 seconds as it goes by, I need to be trained on how to do that, how to even walk on the factory floor. You need to be trained because there's robots that can kill you on the factory floor, right? So you got to be safety approved to be able to go on the factory floor, right? Well, that means you need to do training. Well, you can get a VR headset for $300-$400 and do this training at home in VR. And when you're in VR, it recreates the real world for you. So you can really accurately do training in a way that you just can't with a 2D screen or with a book or anything.
Yeah.
Right. And so, right there, you're seeing that. There's entire companies that do this, right? Osso VR is doing surgery training this way with VR. So they take surgeons into VR and teach them a new procedure. You're seeing sporting teams use VR. In fact, Stanford University, Jeremy Bailenson started a company with his students. They started taking 360 cameras onto the football field and recording football practice. And then they let the quarterback practice his plays at night in VR, and his stats improved. And that started a company called Striver, which ended up selling 17,000 VR headsets to Walmart to do this kind of at-home training. Of employees, right? So there's a lot of magic that we can talk for hours about the magic of VR that very most people don't realize because they've never really had a VR headset or used it for more than gaming, right? I've used VR for a lot of things, from walking around a virus in a program called Nanome with some scientists. It's a program that lets you see chemical structures of things. And they had the virus blown up as big as my house, and we were walking through the chemical structure of it, and there was three scientists on the side of me walking around with it and telling me, "Hey, check this out. Look at how this works, right?" And they showed me the chemical structure, and we could even click on an oxygen molecule and change it, right? And that's remarkable new capabilities for human beings.
Yeah, it sounds like something out of a Marvel film.
Yeah, that's what I do. I study science fiction. Science fiction starting to come real, right?
So, moving on, we've again seen a lot of existing companies and products incorporate AI however they can into their offerings for consumers to sort of stay relevant and keep competing. Even at Social Champ, we've introduced a suite of AI features, to generate images and write content for you. But
Well,
I'd like
moving
to.
forward, I've been following your Twitter for
Hello?
a while now, and I've
Oh,
seen.
hold on a second. Mansoor was talking. Can you guys hear each other?
Wait, let me
It was
just.
overlapping, actually. Yeah, you can go ahead.
Sorry. So,
Yeah,
Mansoor,
sorry.
finish up your question and we'll. Sorry.
My bad. So, I was just talking about how, we've introduced AI into our own platforms as well. And I just wanted to ask you, what are some of your favorite products and, just daily use applications that you use that have started, using AI? Like you mentioned that, I assume you're driving a Tesla, that, you get autopilot, all that stuff. So what other examples do you have from your life that,
Well, the June Evan, Spotify uses AI to pick your music playlist, right? I met the guy who did that, and he said, "Oh, I'm going to beat Apple." And I'm like, "How do you know that?" He said, "Well, I have more data than Apple does.
Oh, that's
More
true, yeah.
users, more data. Therefore, my playlists are better because AI is." He's not the only one to tell me this. AI is 10% algorithms and 90% data. If you can get the data to train the models, right? Stable Diffusion, for instance, ingested 100,000 gigabytes of data to make their AI art engine that many of us are using. And that made a model that's about 2 gigabytes. So the compression on this is crazy because that model knows all sorts of weird little patterns that are in those images and videos that it ingested. Right. So Stable Diffusion is one of these models is highly interesting to me. Plus, Apple blessed it. This is the first time Apple's blessed a 1-year-old company in public. Apple announced they're working with Stable to get them to be a premier model on this new AI mesh network I keep telling people about that's coming in June, right? That's a huge shift for Apple. I've never seen Apple bless a company like that. But anyways, we can talk about lots of consumer things that are happening. Irina and I are excited about getting some sort of new holodeck a 3D environment that we're going to talk to and say, hey, take us to the Taj Mahal, and boom, you're in the Taj Mahal, right? Or take us to Yosemite National Park, boom, you're in Yosemite, right? And stability is one of those engines in play to do that. Unity's building one. Apple is also building one of their own. We'll see it in June, right? To do that, you also need a voice system. So OpenAI's Whisper is one that I'm thinking of a lot. It's how do you talk to a 3D environment and have it understand your voice? That's a real important piece. There's a whole bunch of people working on that kind of thing. Siri, Alexa, Google Assistant are the older ones. We'll see how they change over the next 12 months to respond to this newer style of OpenAI's Whisper, which has a much better training set behind it. Right. Yeah. And by the way, why do you think Elon Musk bought Twitter? What are we doing right now? We're talking into a microphone. Yeah. That data is being recorded. It's being recorded. So Tesla could build a voice system using the data from Twitter Spaces and be very, very good, because there's a lot of Twitter Spaces on a lot of different topics with a lot of different people, right?
True. I never looked at it that way, but now it's
I do. I'm like, why is Elon? Why did Elon spend $44 billion?
And,
there's a reason.
True.
Yep. So Twitter is a good example. Twitter has a lot of data in its databases that hasn't yet been ingested into an AI to build a model yet, right? So when I went to Barcelona, I was standing out in the waterfront going, oh, what should I do here? I pull out Twitter and go, Barcelona, fun things to do at Barcelona waterfront. And sure enough, there's thousands of tweets with pictures of people having fun at various things around the waterfront, right? None of that has been ingested into an engine. In fact, if you try to talk to OpenAI's ChatGPT about new things, about that kind of thing, it says, oh, I haven't been trained that way. I can't even talk. I can't even see that. My training was done a year ago, so it's not up to date, right? And I can't talk to the web. I can't do that kind of thing. And so it's an unanswered question on ChatGPT. When you start talking to it about Twitter things, like, you know, like I asked it to build me a fantasy football game, ChatGPT, and it did all right, but it couldn't do, it didn't have any of the data from the last year of football. So it's answering the question the way it would be answered last year.
Yeah.
Right?
ChatGPT is a bit, you know, does have some limitations.
I mean, yeah.
Many. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I was just talking, like, I've been following you on Twitter for a while now, and I see that you retweet a lot of great stuff. So can you tell our listeners, like, what resources they should follow or subscribe to get updates regarding the industry? Anything?
There's like 1,000 newsletters now that you could follow. If you don't want to follow, like, I'm following 35,000 people, and usually I'm using TweetDeck to watch the world go by in real time from a number of different perspectives, right? One column is investors, one column is entrepreneurs, one column is journalists, right? And I can, on one screen, I can literally watch the world go by, right? And retweet anything that's important going on there. Most people don't have the time or the care or the knowledge or, you know, or the understanding to do that. So a newsletter is probably a better way to go. Or even go to TechMeme every morning, and that'll tell you the industry news. That'll tell you, you know, oh, ChatGPT just announced something new this morning, right? But if you want to get more in depth, it's better to follow a few people like me who retweet the important things, and then all of a sudden you'll see a lot of AI news and a lot of what the thinking is. Because that's what I find is different from the newsletters. The newsletters will tell you, oh, ChatGPT got, you know, new version got announced this morning. The people using this and finding quirky things that it does or doesn't do, that's what I'm seeing. That's why I can talk to you about AI art, even though I don't do a lot of AI art, because I know what the problems are that those people are trying to solve, and I talk to a lot of them, and what it does well, right? And it does some things really well, and some things it doesn't look so well, right?
Yeah, that's right. Moving forward, is there anything in particular you're excited for the future of AI, like we mentioned about robots or semantic web? Anything you expect or excited about?
Well, are you talking about like this year or 5 years from now or 10 years from now? Because I'll give you a different answer for each of those, right?
5 years from now.
I couldn't hear you. Sorry, you were breaking up.
Yeah, let's see.
You're still breaking up. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. How many, what you, let's say 5 years, because I didn't hear you. Sorry. Let's say 5 years. In 5 years, autonomous cars are really done. And so that's going to radically change our economy. We could spend some time talking about that. The autonomous car is going to be joined with a humanoid robot. So the autonomous car can bring a robot to your house to deliver pizza, right? Or something like that. And when that happens, and Irina and I wrote a whole paper on that, and we figure it's around 2026 that that's going to happen. So maybe we're wrong. Maybe it's 2029. Maybe it's 2025. It might happen faster. We just saw the robot again, and it learned a lot of things from 6 months ago, right? It's already walking around and picking think tools up and, pouring things. So they're teaching it at a pretty quick r rate. When the humanoid robot arrives in our house, it's going to change all of our brands. Because if you're asking your robot to do your laundry, don't you ask your robot to do your laundry, and your robot decides what soap to use to do the laundry, right? That has deep implications for Procter and Gamble. They better have an answer to that, because they're gonna see their brand taken away. And where did I come up with that idea? Because I was hanging out with the founder, with the CEO of Moët, a big alcohol company in Europe. They make champagne and a whole bunch of, they have 100 and something brands of alcohol. And I was asking him, what keeps you up at night? He goes, Uber does. I'm like, you're an alcohol company. What does Uber have to do with alcohol? He goes, first of all, I'm not an alcohol company. I'm a party delivery company. And Uber can deliver a party to you better than I can and take away my brand and my relevance and my profits, right? And so that got me thinking about that. And he's right, that a self-driving car can radically change consumer behavior because it can bring other robots into your house. So
Yeah.
that's how I think. That's 5 years, right? Plus, we'll have augmented reality glasses on so that you're going to control your robots or dress them up virtually, right? It's going to be a weird world 5 years from now, man. It's going to be a weird world at Christmas time this year. I mean,
Yeah, I agree. I
we're
think
already seeing
even,
the world changing literally every week.
literally, yeah. I think in the next 2 years, we'll be seeing something entirely different.
But I, talking to the people who are building this, you get an idea of where things are about to go. You don't know exactly what's going to happen, particularly with content, right? If we went to Eastman Kodak's lab 100 and something years ago and saw the first movie camera, did we, or a projector, movie projector, do we think about Jaws or Star Wars or Star Trek or James Bond? No. We have an idea that something like that is possible all of a sudden, but we don't know what somebody's going to do 30 years from now with it, right?
Exactly. Yeah, possibilities are endless.
Absolutely. Mixed reality brings anything visual is possible and anything in audio is possible. So you want to blow up the house across the street? Not a problem. Hollywood does that all the time. It's just really expensive. It's about to get very cheap. Right? That's what generative AI does for you, makes creating content very cheap. Right? Here's an example. I met Edward Saatchi, who started Fable Studios. He won an Emmy Award for his work on a project called Wolves in the Walls, which is a VR it's let's call it a VR movie, a VR
Yeah.
experience. When I first saw it, he put me into a girl's house, and I saw a girl jumping around her house, writing on the walls, and then she comes over to me and starts talking to me in a movie, right? So think about this: an actor is talking to you and handing you things. She handed me a flashlight. Said, "Here, have my flashlight," and I took her flashlight from her and shone it at her, and it worked like a real flashlight. I could flash it around the house and see things in the walls that she was, it lights up the house, and that's mind-blowing, right? But that experience cost $15 million to make. It's very, very expensive technology to do. Generative AI can do that for a couple hundred bucks.
Yeah, it's very exciting times we're living in.
Eventually. Right?
So, yeah,
This is
I'm
why I'm
curious.
excited about the AI artists, because they're learning to talk to the AI to get a 2D image out of it, while Stable Diffusion is working on 3D scene, 3D object, 3D human, 3D virtual human, right? So that's why I'm excited about the artists, because they're the early users of the engine. Well, when 3D arrives, they're going to be really good at it. They're going to be performance artists. You're going to just sit on your couch watching an artist build an entire village in front of you, and it's going to be quite enjoyable to do that.
Well, those were all the questions we had, but I'm curious to know if the audience has any specific questions,
Yeah, come on
from
up.
Robert and his expertise. I'd love to take a few questions before we end.
Yeah, come on up. We can have a conversation for a while. Some things I would ask about, because you're talking about transforming industries. AI lets you see patterns in your business data that you can't really see very well. There was an Israeli company that showed me an early AI. They were building this for Fortune 50 companies. One of the companies that was using their AI ingested all of their sales data right into this AI, and it started showing them patterns that they didn't know about, because it also ingested all the sales data from other sources. And they found that this was a retail store that was using this AI. It showed them that some of their locations were doing better than other locations because there was a laundromat next door. That maybe you might have seen that as a human if you did enough store tours and looked around and thought about why people were spending more money in your store. But an AI, a computer, can see that pattern real quick and showed it to them and made them billions of dollars, because they started buying laundromats and building laundromats next to all their stores, right? So that's the kind of thing that an AI can see patterns that you can't see, and therefore can do things. Same thing with surgeons, right? You think about surgeon. I've met plenty of surgeons in my life. People who are like working on tumors in your lungs or something like that. Well, the AI can see tumors better than you can. It's more accurate at seeing t tumors than a surgeon is, for a whole lot of reasons, right? And it's better than the best surgeon. So the worst surgeon is way better than that person, right? It democratizes medicine to a lot more people.
So we have a question in the replies as well as the speaker on board with us, but let me just ask the question. Someone wrote, will technology be able to replicate the human brain with all its functions? Is somebody working on that at least?
Yes. But not soon. But that's why I ask, how many years do I have? If you give me 20 years, we're gonna make a pretty good stab at it, right? All right. So I saw brain surgery where the patient was awake, and the surgeon cut open the guy's head, and while he was awake, and because they keep you awake, the brain doesn't feel pain. So if you probe the, if you cut the brain, you don't feel pain. There's no pain sensor up there. So he was mapping out this guy's brain by touching the brain with a sharp instrument. And at one point, he touched the brain, and the patient raised his hand involuntarily, right? So there was a couple cells that was controlling how you raise your hand up and down, right? So can we figure out how to put an electrode there and control you? Yes, we can. It's just that surgery comes with a lot. First of all, it costs $150,000 just to cut you open that way. Second, it comes with a lot of side effects, right? The FDA just turned down Neuralink and said, no, you're not ready to put wires on people's brains yet. You haven't proven this is safe yet, right? And so, how many more years do we need before they have the data and the proof that they can do this in a safe way? It's not many. You know, is it 20? No, it's less. Right? It's less than 10. So we're going to map out the brain and we're going to figure it out. But that's a future product. The augmented reality glasses, by the way, are a really important part of figuring out your brain because it's going to be watching what you're looking at, what you're touching, what you're talking to, what you're gesturing to, right? And if they put a few more sensors on your head somewhere, they can use that to start doing some crazy stuff. Snap bought a company called NextMind, which puts a bunch of sensors on the back of your head. The back of your head is where your visual processing is done. So when you're looking at the world, right, the brain in the back of your head is where that's being processed. And if you put a bunch of EEG sensors there and put an AI computer there, you can actually sort of start to figure out what you're actually seeing. Right? And it's like,
Interesting.
whoa, that's crazy. But we need the data of what you actually are seeing to make that really, really work well, right? And that's what I'm saying. This is like an onion. You just need to build the
Peel it
onion
back layer by
layer by
layer.
layer, right? And that's a future layer that will be built. And there's a few fundamental layers first that need to be built, right?
That is actually very exciting stuff. Kind of scary
Yeah,
too.
Meta has an armband, right, that goes around your arm, and it can sense electricity going through your nerves, right? So you think about controlling your hand, squeezing your hand. How did you squeeze your hand? Well, your brain told the hand to squeeze, and it sent electricity down your nerves to your hand to tell it to squeeze. Well, the armband can pick that up. And therefore, you can shoot a gun without even squeezing your hand. You just have to twitch just slightly, right? And it's good enough at picking that electricity up and figuring out what you want to do. So there's a whole bunch of new devices coming that'll integrate with your human body, with your nervous system, with your brain at some level. And, give it enough years, it gets pretty good.
So Luca, you requested to speak. Do you have any questions for
Yeah, they're
Strawberry?
short. Actually, yeah, my question is, do you have any insight, info related to filmmaking industry, Hollywood in specific, and the broadcast industry? So, in terms of, I don't know, cinematography, are there any companies involved in AI in in those two industries? So that's the question.
Irina and I just interviewed a bunch of directors for our last paper on how generative AI is affecting entertainment industry or could in the future. I mean, Stability AI has, I'm sorry, OpenAI has a script writing tool, right? So they're using it to start writing scripts, and the storytellers that make movies are starting to use it to help them write stories, and it's pretty interesting listening to those people talk about that. And all the way through, I mean, are we seeing this generative AI being used in a Marvel movie yet? No, right? But it's coming. Neural radiance fields is something we should talk about because that has a big implication on even 2D movies in the future, and that's where Luma AI is being used inside some of the Marvel movies that are coming in the future. All right, so let's talk about neural radiance fields because it's a fun thing I'm a photographer, so I care about imagery. The neural radiance fields are 3D field scenes that are hallucinated by an AI after it ingested your 2D photos or videos, right? So you take an, let's say I want to make a 3D scene of the tree in my backyard. I would take my iPhone, take some photos while walking around the tree, stick that into a Luma AI or NVIDIA's AI, and it builds a model with that data, and then hallucinates back a 3D scene. And it's a 3D scene of everything, the whole freaking Silicon Valley around my tree, right? And you can, in augmented reality, you're going to soon be able to walk around the tree, right? In 3D. So that's quite exciting. One of the advantages of doing media with neural radiance fields is you can put a virtual camera anywhere in the scene, aimed in any direction. In fact, you can put as many cameras as you want. You can have within some limits, but generally they're infinite cameras, infinite camera directions. So now the Hollywood is like, well, we need to do a weird camera move. We can't move a physical camera through a straw. So how would we do that? Oh, we'd build a neural radiance field and fly the camera through the straw that way. And that's sort of the early experiments that Hollywood is doing with Luma AI and others. Make sense?
Yeah, makes sense. Well, just one more question. What about cinematography? Like, that cameras would, I don't know, help cinematographers, or maybe, in the indie scene where people not so averse in filmmaking. Any info on that?
Yeah, if you talk to Michael Mansouri, who rents cameras to, or had a business for years that rents cameras to the Hollywood, he's building arrays of cameras that go around the actor to capture every freaking ray of light that is coming off of them, right? And why do you need that? Because that builds a great neural radiance field, right? That neural radiance field, the Luma AI company is virtualizing an array camera. As you move your camera around the tree, you're actually building an array of cameras, a group of cameras that's all the way around the tree. It's virtualized. This research came out of Stanford University, where they built an array camera. DARPA funded the project, and they wanted to see through a bush. So they built a grid of cameras and a computer that controlled all the cameras. To say, oh, I saw a little piece of the image through this camera. I saw another piece of the image through this camera. Let's join all those little pieces together and make a picture of what's on the other side of the bush. Well, that's being used in Hollywood. That's one of the bleeding edge camera technologies that they're using, right? They're capturing actors in new ways with new kinds of grids of cameras. And then once you have that as a data field, the nerds in San Francisco who make the movies can do lots of fun things.
Thanks for your question, Luca. We can move on to another.
The original Matrix movie was an
Oh,
early
sorry.
example of this kind of array camera, right? They put an array of cameras around the actors, and then they could capture them doing things and slow down the scene and move around the scene virtually and do some new effects that nobody had seen before, right?
Yeah. We have another speaker on board if they'd like to ask their question.
Hello.
Hi,
First of
Aiken.
all, thank you for taking my question. And first of all, sorry for my bad English. I wanted to thank Mr. Roberts for his wonderful, of course, answers and to giving us the his experience. My question is, what you think about Meta and Apple, when the levels and steps that they will take to make augmented reality devices mass consumer products?
Yeah.
And the second question is what you think about you know, the competition now between the big companies like Apple, Meta, HTC. Now we see Xiaomi, Alibaba. Did you think that China maybe will be faster to adoption in this industry? And thank you.
Yeah. Yes. they have a when I went to the Stanford AI party that a couple of weeks ago, I talked to several Chinese about this, and they say China is behind US in some ways and ahead in others. So it'll be interesting to see. China can make things fast and cheap, cheaper than we can make them. And so they can keep underpricing us on hardware, and that'll be something to pay attention to. China also has three times more people than America does, right? Just America versus China. So they have more data. Therefore, their AI can do things that ours can't because they have more data. And they have more people who use these things, particularly for payments. I mean, it's just recently that Apple Pay has gotten pretty ubiquitous here in America and Europe. Well, in China, they've had it for years, you know. They have WePay, WeChat, and they use it for everything. And the government forced that and subsidized that years before we did. So they have a lot more data on certain kinds of things. Apple's not done yet, though. I mean, let's take the VR industry, right? You got Meta with Quest, and Quest 3 is coming this year for consumers, and let's call that a $500 device. That's a mixed reality device. Apple will come in with a more expensive device that will have much better chips in front of you. So Apple's device is going to do movies in a way that you haven't seen movies done at home. Think of an IMAX theater in your house on your face, okay? And Meta cannot match that because they don't have the 4K chips and they don't have the GPU. Apple's GPU is twice to three times faster than Qualcomm's GPU, right? So there's advantages there. To me, it's Apple is in the place to radically redefine the market again. Only Apple has retail stores. So let's start with that. How is the normal everyday person going to see this, going to get excited about it, going to try it? Well, Apple has stores, and they have $1 million TV at the back of most of these stores. Like I went to the one in Barcelona. They have the TV at the back of the store. The sales pitch for the first device is go to the Apple store, look at the TV at the back of the store, then put on the headset, and it's going to eviscerate that TV. It's not even going to be close, right? The experience of being in an AR headset is going to be completely better than looking at a 2D TV, even a really expensive 8K TV like the one at the back of the Apple store. So only Apple has that ability to do that. So how is anybody else going to sell this to people? I don't get it. I don't get how Mark Zuckerberg is going to talk to normal people and get them to try it. Not going to happen. Then you keep going down the line, right? You start thinking, well, who's number one in supply chain? I visited China several times and went to the factories, and Apple is number one customer. Everybody knows this in China. Apple's number one. They are number one at TSMC. They get first dibs. They get first rights because they spend more money on the supply chain. I visited Seagate's factory that made 1.1 million hard drives a week. They make the same freaking hard drive on 20 lines in this factory. One of the lines is Apple's line, and it has more steps to it. It has a scanning electron microscope in the fucking Apple line. It had more Q&A tests. Everybody knows Apple spends more money in the factory than anybody else. So who's going to make the best device? It's going to be hard to beat Apple, right? who's going to show it to you? Only Apple has store in Barcelona. Meta doesn't. Google doesn't. I mean, you can go and buy a Google device somewhere, right? But it's not the kind of store that you go and look at new things and try to get it inspired by to spend money, right? Then you start going, okay, when you get it home, what are you going to do with this? Well, most people still want to watch movies or TV shows or football games, right? Well, Apple has the number one movie, and they just won all the awards for best movie, right? With their studio, Tim Cook's been building a studio system for years and is paying off. He also has the best TV show. He won all the Ted Lasso won best TV show last year, right?
Yeah.
So he has the best movies, the best TV shows. You know, so when you put this device on, you're going to have a lot of content that Mark Zuckerberg hasn't even thought about. He doesn't have TV shows or movies, right? Then you start thinking, oh, what else are you going to do in your house with a device like this? Listen to some music. Well, Apple has the best music rendering system for Dolby Atmos by far. It just updated my TV and it got dramatically better, right? For playing surround sound music, if you have a surround sound system, like a Dolby Atmos surround sound, like I have a Sonos system with 25 little speakers around me, all controlled by computers. Well, that control is done by software, and Apple has by far the best software. It's way better than Tidal, way better than Amazon, and Spotify hasn't even started doing Dolby Atmos yet, right? So you start thinking about music. Okay, you're going to listen to Apple Music. And you just keep going down the line. When you talk to independent developers who make an iPhone apps and stuff like that, they all say, we do it for Apple first. Why? Well, it's easier, yes. But it's more profitable because all the rich people are on Apple devices, right? So the people who are going to buy your games or your, you know, utilities or whatever, they're all on Apple devices. Apple makes more money for the developers. So they're going to have more apps on this headset, right? And then you start thinking, oh, well, okay, what if Mark Zuckerberg could actually sell us a VR headset? Well, he doesn't have phones. He doesn't have tablets. He doesn't have desktop computers. He doesn't have an ecosystem around you. When I'm playing in my headset, my kids are going to be able to join me in a game with their iPhones or iPads, right? Or really, it'll work the reverse. My kid will steal the headset, and then I'll have to join in with a headphone or a tablet, right? But Meta doesn't have that.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. Right. And then Meta doesn't have the mesh network that's hooked up to the AI inferencing engines in the home. So where are you going to do all your AI inferencing? Up on the cloud, right? Oh, when I played VR in my family room, it has four cameras on the front of it. My wife walked into the room naked one time when I was playing VR. Have you thought this through? Have you thought through where you're going to do your AI inferencing? Do you really want that done on the cloud? Really? I don't, for a whole lot of reasons. Getting packets up to the cloud has latency, takes power, and has a huge privacy problem, right? So Apple has it in the house and on your head. Be like, most of that stuff doesn't leave your head. You can just hear the, Tim Cook's sales pitch for this thing. It's like, we have devices in your house already that support this headset. Nobody else does. So how is anybody else going to compete with them? That's the question.
Yeah, that is hard to imagine.
Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg, the reason he's spending billions of dollars a quarter is he's building a lot of custom silicon because he knows he doesn't have the phone. He doesn't have... Apple has a device probably in your hands right now, right, that has a lot of GPU, has a 5G radio, has CPU, has a big ass battery, right? And they can put a lot of technology down there. So when Apple brings out its glasses, the glasses are going to be very, very small and very lightweight and use very little power, i.e. last a long time on one battery charge, right? And Mark Zuckerberg is having to spend a lot of money just to try to get to compete with that. to do it in custom silicon so that they can build lightweight glasses with very small computers that don't use much power. They're really at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
Which I'm hearing rumors now that Mark Zuckerberg's giving up on his metaverse dreams. Well, you know, don't give that up, because there's some business there, even if Apple takes over the world, because you can build 3D things. Like Horizon Worlds is actually a pretty interesting idea. If they can bring that to the Apple device, okay, they'll be around. And then if they come out with their own device that's a lot cheaper and maybe more capable because they've done some cool engineering, we'll see, right?
Yeah, exciting.
Yeah, we haven't even started talking about the AI work. Now, he has a lot of data. How many pictures of the Golden Gate Bridge does Instagram have? Millions. How many pictures do you need to make a neural radiance field? 3, according to an engineer at Unity. And he says, really, we can do it with 1. So can he make a really high-res neural radiance field of the Golden Gate Bridge or any place popular in the world? Yes, he could. We just haven't seen him able to do that yet, because he has a problem. He has so much data in Instagram. How many NVIDIA cards does he need to build the model from Instagram? A lot. I don't know that he has that kind of budget yet to go and buy another couple data centers that full of NVIDIA cards. Not to mention, even if he did, it takes time to build that.
Right? Yeah, I can imagine.
I saw into many data centers. These are big, mile-long buildings now, full of equipment, like stacked wall to ceiling with computers. So that takes a while for your team to execute on and build, right?
Yeah.
And that's assuming he has the budget to do it. Do you got an extra $1 billion in your pocket, Mark Zuckerberg? Yeah, he probably does, but
he probably does. Yeah. Well, I think that's all the time we have. Okay. And big thank you to you, and you know, for imparting all of your knowledge and wisdom.
Well, I don't have a lot of knowledge and wisdom. I just am a good pattern recognizer, because I've been inside of a lot of things. And so I can see a startup and know sort of where that's going to fit, right? And so I'm a good pollinator. I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, and I'm watching a lot of people on Twitter and doing other things. So, yeah, it's not that I can build any of this stuff. I'm not the genius who's going to build it, but I have talked to so many geniuses that it seems like I'm the genius, and that's not true.
No, I'm sure it's true to an extent. But in any case, a big thanks to you, a big thanks to our audience as well for tuning in. And, you know, maybe who knows, we'll do another one of these sessions with Robert and maybe another guest.
Yeah.
So, thank you all. And
thanks. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.